Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Another foul on board. This third for setting a screen.
Because of physical play, although Jordan Taylor just got caught with a moving screen.
Izzo's dying for a moving screen.
It's that dreaded moving screen.
Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Moving Screen podcast. I'm Brendan Quinn of The Athletic. With Dylan Burkhart of UM Hoops.
How you doing today, man?
I'm great. Today, it's been a day. I'm looking into what kind of numbers it would take for potentially to acquire UM Hoops. What kind of investment that would take? Because I know of a place that's buying.
You know of a place that's buying? We haven't been out there in the market. We'll have to see.
Well, you know, maybe there might be some butter out there for you, for all you know.
Not sure if the New York Times is after... No, strictly a Michigan basketball subscriber base, but hey, they're after a athletic subscriber base. So
how about that?
Congrats on the big moves.
Crazy times, crazy
how that
times.
Plays out.
Yeah, we will see how it plays out. I'm excited to see how it plays out. I've not checked social media. I probably will not to see what the reactions are. But everything sounds pretty on the up and up. And we'll see. But we have much more pressing things in the world, Dylan.
I would say
we only get two of these a year, brother.
And it's far more important than your career. So it is, we're going to get right into it.
It's way more important than my livelihood and my career. Yes, this Saturday in Ann Arbor, knock on wood, Michigan State at Chrysler for round one of the rivalry. As of now, we are recording this. It is 6:25 p.m. Eastern time on Thursday. Right now, game on. Last I checked this morning was game on. I know there's a lot of, worries, fear, consternation, whatever out there that maybe Michigan gets hit a little bit harder by its current rash of medical issues, I think they're calling them. But as of now... I believe they are playing. So let's hope that remains the case.
We could do a deep dive on how is non-COVID illness a status, but then you have medical issues as a separate status. Interesting to consider as we go through some of these press releases here in the current times that we're living in.
Going to check the New York Times style guide on that.
what we do know is that unlike last year, or I guess just different than last year, there are kind of a set rule of when a Big Ten game happens or doesn't happen. The rule is 7 scholarship players have to be available to play and 1 countable coach, which means head coach or assistant coach.
That is the threshold for play. Correct. You as a program can be under that number and still decide to play, though.
Okay.
So just...
Have we seen any?
I don't know.
That seems like a stretch. Like it does seem like a pretty fair low bar to play with 7 players.
True, but who was the coach from Hoosiers? Dale. What's his first name? Norman Dale. Just to go. That's my guy. My team's on the court. Play with four players.
Yeah, and I guess the other thing along those lines is the NCAA selection committee put out a press release today, basically.
I did not see this.
Telling teams to follow those rules, essentially, and that they will look at it kind of like they do with injuries and try to sort that out, whatever that means.
That makes sense.
I think that that whole, like, just generally speaking with the NCAA selection thing, the way injuries are interpreted is a pretty slippery slope, I'd say, and it seems to lead to some interesting decisions. Like, I don't really know how you really adjust for COVID if you're not going to do it. If another, what about a team that wins three games because it plays teams that had COVID issues? Like, who knows? It's just a silly thing, I think, overall.
Well, I hear you, but I would also say I think it really only comes up in the selection process when it really gets down to like team versus team scenarios of like when you like point being like when it gets hyper specific on the team A versus team B, you know, getting into the specifics of each game is when I think that's actually taken into account, as opposed to like, yeah, this team, this is its resume, but it had a little pause there, or it had, you know, a rash of COVID. So let's bump them up 2 wins. Like, it doesn't work that way. You know what I mean?
So fast forward 2 months from now, Michigan's on the bubble.
Yes.
Michigan was without 4 or 5 players, whatever it was, at Rutgers. Are you throwing that game out because Terrence Williams couldn't play? Some other team is going to say, well, we had COVID here. Like, how do you, like, who's making that call? You know what I mean? It's one thing if it's
this is who's making that call. I mean, if it's Michigan and Wichita State on the, as the last two, you know, for that 68th spot, and they get into the actual schedules and Michigan or Wichita State didn't have any COVID issues, and you can look at Michigan and say, well, hey, you know, that loss to Rutgers, man, they only had 6 guys really, but like, that's what I'm saying in terms of,
and
like,
then flip
the
it
specificity
around
of it.
Mm-hmm. Say Michigan's on the bubble. Ohio State, Iowa, and Illinois all had massive COVID outbreaks the last week of the season. Michigan beats all three of them. No one's discounting those wins, right? Like, it's just so arbitrary. And I feel like
it's a slippery slope. I don't disagree with you.
More issues when they go into some of these problems than if
they were just playing. There's a very good chance they just issued this statement just so coaches would shut the hell up about it, because I'm sure there is just a rash of
absolutely.
You can't count this loss and all this shit, right? I mean, we know these guys, and that is 100% what's going on.
Yes. All right.
But
anyways,
we're in the wrong wormhole. We're in the wrong wormhole. We got to go down the right one.
We're already getting off topic. Today, we're going to go Michigan, Michigan State. We're going to do, I think, one of your favorites. We're going to go position by position, hand out advantages at each spot, and then maybe hit on some final keys and get out of here. Let's do it.
And this being a podcast in the dark, we both have some beers. What are you drinking?
I've got the Pseudo Sioux Pale Ale. It's from Toppling Goliath. I think it's in Iowa.
Oh, Iowa.
Real solid beer if you ever find one.
I like the Big Ten representation. I'm going with Subtly Sight. This is a very appropriate beer. Subtly Self-Righteous Black IPA from Stone Brewing.
All right.
It's good. I got one of those big, a 12 pack variety, the IPA Stone, or the Stone IPA variety pack with one of each of their IPAs. Pretty good. Strong. It's black, very dark. Okay. Let's get into it. So we're going to go all 5 primary positions and then the bench. We're going to say who has the advantage on each, and then we'll get into some keys of the game. So let's start out top. Something that we talked about a ton coming into the year, this notion of both of these teams having up transfer point guards coming in and being handed the keys. Lo and behold, we get to see these two guys go head to head. Devontae Jones, Tyson Walker. I think we all know where we're going to go here, maybe. I don't know. I mean, Devontae Jones has kind of been on the uptick here. in recent weeks, the Rutgers game withstanding, whereas Tyson Walker has been steadily good. Maybe not spectacular, but good.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I would definitely give, I think we can probably just, like, I think you kind of have to include A.J. Hogarth in this conversation, mm-hmm, too. Like, mm-hmm, it's very much a two-horse situation, yeah, at Michigan State. And I think that there's been pretty good, like, last year, Michigan State was sort of this, they played too many guys and no one, they didn't get the best out of anyone. Whereas I think Michigan State is platooned at several spots this year, but it feels like you're getting enough out of guys. Like, that's kind of a trend when you go through the rotation, right? Even if guys aren't 30-minute a game players, they're making an impact. They have a role. It's just, it's all very, it all fits nicely, which is pretty much the biggest difference between these two teams. I think if you look just kind of position by position, Tyson Walker, I think his defense in this game will be really key. Mm-hmm. He's averaging like 2-something steals a game over the last 5 games. His hands are just really quick. His ability to pressure the ball should give Michigan some issues, I would think. That's kind of been the situation that causes Devontae Jones some issues at different points throughout the year. The thing with Devontae is you just don't really know what version of him you're going to get. I think, yeah, a lot of that depends on how teams guard him and how they guard Michigan's ball screen game, which does lead to maybe some interesting questions in this one. I'm not, like, Michigan State as a base defense really likes to usually more of a soft hedge against ball screens and kind of play it straight up. They will, and they have in a couple of recent games, hedge a little harder to kind of disrupt that ball screen. Recently against Michigan, the big adjustment has been go under everything and make Michigan shoot over the top. They did it against Franz Wagner, did it against Mike Smith a bit, Xavier Simpson. Like, that's been something that Michigan State goes to in this game. I think, like, it's very unique because Michigan has seen that this year, especially recently. UCF did that. Trying to think, a couple of the other more recent games when Devontae actually played pretty well and scored pretty well, that was mostly because teams were going under screens, daring him to shoot. He did make some shots. He scored a bit. Rutgers played it more straight up, went over the top, really just took him out of his game, mm-hmm, and he didn't have that offensive game. He couldn't really finish inside. I think the play for Michigan State is to play their base ball screen defense here, hedge a bit, mostly play soft. If he's going to come off that and score, okay, but I don't think you – I don't know. How do you think that Michigan State guards ball screens in this game? Because I do think that's pretty key for what you get out of Devontae.
I mean, I think you kind of hit it with that they've had success against Michigan – going under, right?
I mean, and mixed success, I think. Well, like,
against better shooting versions of Michigan, teams with 3-4 guys shooting 40% plus, that's not this group right now. I would say you could make the case of, if you look at what Rutgers did, the last thing you want to do if you're Michigan State is say, it's almost what Michigan saw from Rutgers. The last thing, if you're Michigan State, is Michigan hitting a couple early threes, getting the building going and feeling good about itself, right? So, you know, maybe, I don't know. Playing its base sounds reasonable to me.
Yeah, I think you are not as worried about those other spots, which lets you play more aggressively, right? I don't think you need to over commit to the ball screen game based on what Michigan has at kind of the other spots. And I think that lets Michigan State be a little more aggressive in how it wants to play. And I think teams almost gave up too much against Devontae, just letting him kind of come off those screens and do whatever. I think if you pressure him, come over the top, stay on his hip, I think it's just going to take Michigan out of its offense even more. So that, mm-hmm, that's an interesting dynamic. The big thing when you look at these two teams on paper is the guys playing point guard are really the only scorers on either team that score a lot of unassisted baskets. So if it comes down to a game where like it's a really a half court grinding game and teams need to get a shot. It's really on whoever's playing point guard for both teams to make those mm-hmm. plays. And that is, I think if you're Michigan, you want to force Tyson Walker to beat you as a scorer. Like that has to be high on the game plan. He has been poor inside the arc. His shooting from three has been a bit inconsistent. Like you can't let Max Christie and Gabe Brown get catch and shoot looks. It has to be, okay, we're going to stay home across the board and try to contain him. Now, Devontae Jones has not been a great one-on-one defender, but that has mm-hmm. to be the game plan, I'd say.
I really struggle with Michigan State's point guard spot. Because every time I watch them, I keep saying, I think it's time to start going 30-10. And when does that happen? A 30-10 split with, you know, for Tyson Walker and AJ Hogard. But then you look at the numbers and it's like, it's tough. AJ, like he does produce, you know, and he gives you such a different look and he does give you a scoring pop and gives you this, but like, I just like how they play so much more when Walker's on the court, you know, the
turnovers with Hogard are,
it's crazy. And he gets that tunnel vision stuff, man, where like, you know, he just missing, like Walker just makes more natural passes and AJ just kind of gets into that, puts his head down, barrels ahead far too often, but he also does.
He's the only guy who can get in and score.
Yeah.
If it's just a shit possession, if you give him the ball, he's just going to charge his way to the basket and is pretty good considering the circumstance at figuring out how to get that ball into the basket. Right. Like, and you need that at times, but his 10 turnovers total over the last two games, that's an ugly, ugly number. It's 7 turnovers against Nebraska.
But then like his assist rate is higher than Walker and their turnover rates are almost identical. 28.7, 20. It doesn't feel that way though. When you watch them, you know, like that's the thing. Like when I watch Michigan State play, I'm like, Jesus. I mean, they look so much better when Walker's out there. And then you look at the numbers and it's just like, huh? Well, I guess like, are my eyes deceiving me? What am I not understanding? You know, it just doesn't match. Like their KenPom page does not match up to what I watch.
That's fair. I do think like if you flip it around, if you're Michigan scouting this game,
mm-hmm.
I do think that's where you need to agree that that's where you need to try to funnel the offense into, like, or is that, do you think that's a risk? I don't know the answer completely, but that's where I would start.
I mean, I think it is a risk because that Walker, you know, if you do put the ball in his hands and let him start creating, he can create. Yep. And if you put the ball in Hogard's hands and let him go to work, he can go score on you. And the last thing you need is AJ Hogard getting 13 points in this game, right?
Yeah. I mean, the last thing you need is Gabe Brown hitting 5 threes in the game.
Well,
that's where I would start, right? Like if you're going to keep the game in sight, right?
Yes.
That's a limited upside, I would say, to both of those guys as scorers. I don't think they really are going to go get you. Like Michigan recently has just been getting lit up by point guards and like playmaking guards. I don't think either of those guys is going to go Rocket Watts and hit 6-7 pull-up jumpers from the free throw line. Do you? Like, I don't know. They don't. Right. That's not really their game.
So I would say like the difference is I agree with you that the lesser of all evils is to let those guys try to beat you. The difference I feel like is like those guys can beat you and the other guys can as well. You know, whereas like with Michigan, if you just go and shut everyone else down and say, hey, Devontae Jones, go get 20. He might get 20 and they might score 60 based on how that offense is going right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I was talking about Michigan defending Michigan State as far what the plan would be. So that I see what you're saying. I feel like it's probably makes sense to keep going down the line here because we're kind of just tying in other pieces as we go.
Yeah. And some of it does kind of play off each other, but advantage Michigan State there clearly. I think, but this is a big spot for both those newcomers playing in this game for the first time. I think that's a really interesting dynamic of veteran guys kind of getting baptism by fire and by playing in this game for the first time. I think that's pretty cool little subplot to watch. All right, next up, you set it up.
We want to start at the two. Yep. Eli Brooks. I feel like Michigan State's a bit interchangeable at the 2-3. Who do we want to go with? You want to say Gabe is at the two?
Let's say Gabe is the two.
Okay. So I think
because I'd rather do the Caleb Max Christie comp.
Just fits nicely for you.
Exactly.
I see how you're thinking here. So this is interesting because these are two guys who kind of get pulled in different directions as far as the mismatch, right? Eli Brooks has been needing to spend time at point guard. Gabe Brown is really more of just a wing, right? It's not really the typical playmaking two. You know exactly kind of what he's going to do. You're going to get catch and shoot looks from three. I'd say he's probably the second best shooter in the Big Ten behind Alfonso Plummer at this point. It's those two guys, if you're going to say top shooter. He's made 20 threes from the left wing alone. Michigan's done a really good job against him defensively in previous years. You have to this is the kind of matchup that I think really illustrates what Michigan's struggling with at this point, because this has been a Michigan defense that's been stay at home, don't give up 3-point attempts in the last two games that has kind of gone by the wayside. I don't really see that necessarily changing. I'd be curious who guards Gabe Brown in this game.
Me too.
I kind of think he's just so important that you have to just put Eli on him because he's the only one you can really trust to find him. I think the biggest concern for Michigan, and this kind of starts up in this spot in the rotation, is can you find Gabe Brown in transition? Michigan's transition defense has been another thing that's been a staple. It hasn't been good. You can't let Gabe Brown walk into transition threes or you're going to lose the game. It's that easy. It's that simple. And just one of those non-negotiables that has been pretty negotiable with Michigan this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, just communication in the early minutes of that Rutgers game were just brutal defensively. And yeah, if it's the same way in this game, Michigan State will do even worse damage than what Rutgers did. But if I'm Michigan, Gabe Brown right now is alarming to me. That his game the other night was his performance versus Nebraska was fantastic. And it went beyond, he went 2-for-5 on threes. And usually once upon a time for Gabe Brown, that would mean that was it. You got 2-for-5 from threes on him, but he was out there deflecting passes, blocking shots. I mean, just playing great defense, inspired play, running the court. I thought he was just, he looked, in terms of as a complete basketball player, right? I thought he looked about as good as we've seen him. And then the shooting is there. And this game means a ton to him. He's playing the best he's played in his entire college career. He's playing 15 minutes from where he grew up. I think he's coming in to kill Michigan in this game. And if they let him get going, I think, he you're right. You said 5 threes earlier, he can bang them. And he seems like he's in that headspace right now of a guy who's kind of really just wired the right way. And it's, you get those guys that kind of catch that in a bottle and ride it for a few games. I think that's the way he's coming into this thing.
Yeah, he's hit, I think, two or more threes in, I want to say, the last six games or something along those lines.
More than that.
I think that I'm curious how he's deployed defensively, because I actually think he might spend more time guarding Caleb with Christie spending more time guarding Eli, but that could be off.
It could be a cross match on the other end though, right?
Yeah, I think Eli will guard. I don't know. It'll be that's really interesting, because I think hit the length that he can present is the one thing that's really given Caleb Houston problems. And from Michigan's point of view, I think the only guy you can really put on him is Eli, because you just can't trust anyone else to stick on him.
And the other thing is Gabe Brown, right? Not only is he big, tall, and long right now, but he's big and strong. Now, this is like, this is senior year Gabe Brown. If you're going to put freshman Caleb Houston the way he's playing right now on him, I don't know how that goes. I don't think you can do that. I think you got to put Eli on him.
Yeah, but the question is, like, the problem is Eli could be spending time guarding, like, in the backcourt also at the one. You put Devontae on him. I don't think he really liked that either. At the end of the day, though, I think what really stands out about this is, like, Gabe and Max run a ton of, like, I'd say both these teams are very set-based in how they play, especially in the, like, when you get in the half court, and Michigan just hasn't done a good job defensively, like, against teams running sets. Like, they're not able to force teams that aren't able to get shots off of their sets, right? They're not forcing a late clock situation. They're literally just giving up plays out of sets. And you're going to run Gabe Brown off screens. It's going to be a problem for Michigan. I think whoever Caleb is guarding is probably where you look to exploit. And in that sense, I think you would rather it be Christie, but he's shooting, like, he's made 10 threes in the last three games also. So I don't really know. You're kind of picking your poison there. But I think Gabe Brown, I don't think he scored more than 6 points in a game against Michigan in his career. Feels like a good spot, but, like, if you're Michigan, you have one defensive card to play. I do think you put Eli on him and see, and say, just don't help off of him essentially and see what happens.
That sounds right to me. But so who do you give, you know, this is, these are kind of the two senior guys, voices of the team, leaders, all that stuff. I do wonder what kind of weight this matchup carries in the overall outcome of the game.
Yeah, it's hard because they're not going to be guarding each other on opposite ends, I wouldn't think necessarily. But I would say they're probably, like, I would say, would you say Gabe Brown's Michigan State's most important player in this game?
No, I think I'd say Marcus Bingham.
Okay. So I don't know how to read the matchup necessarily. Like, I think, like, Gabe Brown's going to score more points. I think what Michigan needs from Eli will shape the game, whether it's, is he playing on the ball? Is he playing off the ball? Is he defending? And it depends a lot on what everyone else does, I would say. So it's hard. I think both of these guys are absolutely need to play a good game if their team wins, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think I agree with that to an extent. Like, I definitely feel like Eli has to have a great game if Michigan wins this game. If you tell me right now Gabe scores 10 points and Michigan State still wins, I would have zero problem believing that.
That's fair. Where are the points coming from? Like, who do you see scoring?
Well, like, that's the thing. This is one of the big differences between Michigan and Michigan State right now. Is like, Malik Hall can go give them 20 tomorrow. On Saturday, Max Christie can give them 15. Hauser can give them 13. Bingham can give them 10 or 12. Like, at the point guard spot, you can get a combined 18 points. And where, like, Michigan has just been it's just been all over the place. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I still, like, Michigan's problems are defensive. I don't know. Like, they're literally all over the place on defense, which is why it's hard to see Christie or Brown not getting more than their share of catch and shoot threes. And if you can't take that away, I think that's probably the key to the game. So that's where I come down on that. Like, I don't know. I trust Michigan State to keep Michigan's players from getting the shots they want a lot more.
Sure. But would you also say Michigan's all over the place offensively too?
I don't think as to the extent that you're talking, like, they have to make shots, but, like, Caleb got 8 open threes against Rutgers. It's just a matter of making shots. So I don't know that it's all over the place as much as it's just not being able to keep up with the mistakes their defense makes.
I got you. All right. Do you want to move on to that next one?
Yeah, let's talk right in. Let's talk Christie Houston.
I have a quick point at the top on this one.
Okay.
Because I said this, I was just doing a Stu's podcast. Nick and I were just on it earlier today. Stu Douglas's show on Field of 68. And we were just kind of talking about the differences between the two, and the Christie Houston thing, I think, is a great underline of why these two teams have gone such different ways this year. Like, look at their shooting numbers, the two of them. Max Christie is shooting 44% on twos, 35% on threes for the year. Caleb Houston is shooting 43% on twos, 31% on threes this year. Volume on both, very close, right? The difference is that one, Max Christie, is on this team where other guys are excelling in their roles and doing their thing, and he's able to just be a freshman. And when he makes shots, great, right? And he has those games where he looks awesome, and you're like, holy shit, this guy's going to be awesome, right? And that's all good. And he's a freshman. You've seen him grow up before your eyes. Whereas Caleb Houston is this guy who, I think you and I said he was going to be the second highest usage player on the team coming into the year, and has the weight of needing to be pretty elite for this team to be good, obviously. And so every shot he misses feels like, right, a boulder on the shoulders. And it's built and built and built. And, you know, in reality, if you just put up, if you put up their stats right next to each other, not a lot of difference. But then talk perception right now, and it's Max Christie's having himself a nice little freshman year, and he's coming along nicely, whereas Caleb Houston's struggling dramatically, and you know what I mean, and like, and not giving Michigan what it needs and all this. And that speaks, I think, to the records of the two programs. Your thoughts?
Yeah, that's not just the Houston Christie thing. That's basically down the line.
Right. If I'm talking about the two five-star freshmen.
If you compare the roster, you could say the same thing about the point guards. You could say the same thing, like, across the board, most of Michigan's problems are guys being forced to do, like, everyone's in a stretch role. You know, when you get promoted and you don't actually know what the fuck you're doing, like, that's kind of what Michigan has going on.
Yeah. It's like me covering Guff.
Yeah, you just show up there and eventually you figure it out, right? So Michigan's figuring out literally as they go.
Yeah,
I don't think anyone's in an ideal role. The other thing, like, yeah, the point you made about, like, Houston stats is interesting. Like, Michigan's stats at the highest level are not bad across the board. Yeah, yeah. Like, if you were to add them all up on a cumulative basis, they're not, they probably wouldn't be that much different than Michigan State's and a lot of spots. Like, obviously 3-point shooting is one, but like the high level numbers, like, Michigan is in aggregate has produced the sort of stats you'd expect from a good team. Michigan's problem is it can't play 40 minutes without making irrational mistakes for at least like a 5 to 6 minute period. And Michigan, they can't execute, right? Like, that's the issue. It's the mistakes made. It's the inability to play without mistakes. And like, teams, it's just a really hard thing to evaluate. The defense has not been up to that level, and especially of late. And it's just a confidence thing, an execution thing that they haven't been able to get, right? Like,
sure.
So much of this isn't about, oh, in a vacuum, player X is more talented than player Y. It's more about Michigan hasn't been able to go and play its best game more than like once or twice all season. And that, until they can figure out how to do that, that's what they're playing against more than anything, I would say.
Yeah, I think that's fair. This, you know, and this game for both of these guys, like, It's almost that the last point we made on Gabe Brown, where it's like, if you tell me Max Christie doesn't have a good game in this, I think Michigan State's still okay. And if you tell me Caleb Houston has another really, you know, struggle filled performance, I think it's really bad for Michigan. And that's, it's not, I don't, I'm not trying to put the whole game on him, right? But the point stands. Max Christie can have a pretty subtle night and whatever. Caleb Houston, I don't think so at this point.
So, here's two things on that.
Okay.
I'm not sure, like, Max Christie doesn't exactly fit the mold of player that's really carved up Houston on the defensive end, I would say. He's really struggled with like athletic, quick twitch drivers who get downhill. So I'm not saying that he'll do a good job defensively against Christie by any stretch. He hasn't really done a good job defensively against anyone this year, but right. I'm not sure how that matchup plays out entirely. It'll be very interesting. They're two guys that are familiar with each other. They've been in the same class. Like, maybe that helps them to an extent. I don't know. I'd be curious how that matchup plays out, how often Michigan State looks to go. Cause like Christie is the guy Michigan State runs a lot of its sets to, and he's the guy who can score in that mid range area, can come off screens and really hit shots. And he was shooting it poorly from three, but he's been lights out from three for the last, I think, three games. Like, that's a concern if you're Michigan, because like Houston will contest the shot, but he's not taking a shot away. Like, you can shoot over him, and I don't think Christie will really have a problem with that.
And Houston's, well, Christie's been lighting it up. Houston is 2 for his last 17 in threes since the Nebraska game. So his last four games.
He was 10 of 13 or something like that before. So, like, I mean, shooting is spurtable, right? Like, there's got to be stretches where he makes shots. There's going to be stretches where he misses.
And
shots.
He needs to keep shooting.
Yeah, I was impressed with how good of looks Michigan got for Caleb Houston against Rutgers. So, like, that's really the odd thing about Michigan's offense at this point is, like, they created a ton of shots at the rim against Rutgers. They created a ton of open jump shots for Houston against Rutgers. They just didn't make enough of them. And really, it's that they couldn't get stops, right? So I'll be interested against that, because like Michigan State is way better defensively. And like the Christie Brown, like Michigan's wings have really struggled against length. And that's been Houston's big thing all year. I do think if Houston does anything, you'll see Gabe Brown switch on to him, because I think that's really a bad matchup for him.
Yeah.
Defensively. And Michigan does try to run Houston into a lot of like second side pick and roll, stuff like that, get him going downhill. And if he has any effect in those spots, I would think you make that switch.
I think Gabe would bother the hell out of him, I would think.
Yep.
And at the same time, you know, this is a spot where you're like, man, if this guy is going to turn it around, because, you know, the reality of this whole deal is still giving credence to the thought of like a player like Caleb Houston can go and just have himself a great game and really get himself back on track and start to and find something in his shot, right? Find something in his game that turns his season around. And we're talking about, right? Like, this just happens in basketball. It happens.
The two best games Michigan's played all year, he hit four threes in both of them. So it's not really much of a, he's capable of hitting multiple threes in a game if he finds that.
Yes. And like, this seems like a spot where, man, if you want to get a guy to find some confidence, find something, this would be a really good time. Michigan State on a Saturday afternoon at home would really be the circle underlined, especially considering the next two games coming up after it.
Yeah, I think that's right. And you're kind of just playing the lottery with that and to see what you get at this point.
I mean, do you think, based on the Rutgers game, it looked like they're just dialing, right? They're just looking for him and looking for him and looking for him. Do you see them continuing to do that until he starts making shots?
Yeah. What else are you
going to do? What else are you going to do? Right. Exactly.
So they literally had six players at Rutgers. who else are you going to dial up shots for at the three? You can't really, Eli was playing on the ball because Devontae played so poorly. You're not going to run action to get Musa Diabate a jump shot. So yeah, you're going to keep dialing up Caleb Houston.
Unless it's the end of the half. That's when you want to get him open look.
The answer is absolutely yes. Like, Caleb Houston's going to get a lot of shots. He's going to just, everyone's going to see what happens whether those go in or not.
Yeah. All right. Advantage.
Christie's playing much, much better over the last however long. I think you would give him the advantage there. The four spot is interesting. Joey Hauser, Musa Diabate. I think what I said about Diabate in the Rutgers game is Michigan's five best possessions probably all involved Musa Diabate, and Michigan's five worst possessions all involved Musa Diabate.
Yeah.
It's just all over the fucking place, man. Yeah. Like, he is so naturally gifted and talented, but he can't string together enough mistake-free possessions that it turns into much. And that's sort of kind of – emblematic of this whole Michigan team in a sense.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what you do. Is he? He's a five. He's a five. Okay. So you can continue to play him at the four because you want to, you know, especially if the roster's limited, right? That's a different thing. Hypothetically, because right now the rule is, right, 5 days of isolation for an asymptomatic player who tested positive. I believe that's right. So in theory, you could get some people back. I have no idea what the hell's going on. But let's just say if you get it within a normal roster construct of Michigan, Diabate's a five. He's not a four, but I understand playing him at the four because he's talented and he needs reps to get good and to be good later in the year. So you need to get him reps one way or another.
And any of your other fours aren't really moving the needle to the extent they need to play.
But Terrence Williams gives you a better chance to win games right now.
Sometimes.
I love Moose at the five.
So let's Rutgers was an awful game to have Musa only at the four because Ron Harper Jr. is just a fat guard and it's very hard to for Musa hasn't guarded someone like that, right? Rutgers was just like running him off of simple double screens and he was getting wide open. Hauser can shoot. I don't know if he's Ron Harper with his mobility. I don't know that he's
but he does as bring deep. But he brings Diabate away from the basket. And that's enough. Diabate defensively being away from the basket neutralizes Diabate's effectiveness as a defender. Because he's only worthwhile at the rim.
I don't know if that's completely true. Okay. I think he struggles a lot. I think he's viewed as a rim protector. He's not a good help side defender or rim protector. So, like, if he's away from the basket, it's not the end of the world. He just has a hard time switching and maneuvering, communicating as an off-ball defender when he's away from the basket. But he has those are issues that are there.
But you just said it though. If you're getting Diabate into ball screens while he's checking Hauser, that's the recipe for disaster.
The difference is I don't think Joey Hauser's running ball screens.
Well, he's setting screens.
Yeah, he's setting screen. Whereas setting Ron screens. Harper was running balls.
I got you.
Like that's the difference. I don't think Michigan State puts you into that kind of a perimeter problem for Diabate to the same extent.
Yes, he will not be guarding Hauser off the bounce out of a ball screen. But he was
against Rutgers. That's what I'm saying.
That's right. And that's separate from the matchup that we're talking about in this game. Like I'm just saying Diabate as a four, when you're putting him in that spot, like I just don't know. My point is that him playing extended minutes at the four right now is not advantageous to winning, despite all the talent in the world.
Yeah.
This is not like my long sell on Diabate, right? I'm just talking about right now. Like, it's just such a mess with him on the court.
The other tricky thing I think that Michigan has is, like the Rutgers game, they started playing Hunter in the high post and he kind of settles for jumpers in that case, but they do that to free up space to post up Diabate.
And I don't like that at all.
I don't really love that because like Diabate can score down there, but Hunter just floating doesn't really do it for me. I think when they switched that around and went inside to Hunter over and over again, he was far more effective against Rutgers. The issue is Diabate spotting up from the perimeter is basically just an instant double opportunity if you're Michigan State.
They just don't play well together right now. That's just the fact of the matter. Meanwhile, I thought the minutes that Diabate gave them, I think in the second half when he was at the five against Rutgers, looked good.
It wasn't a ton.
There was a good stretch. They had a good stretch.
Hunter played 38 minutes.
They had a good stretch of plays. Apparently, it was 2 minutes, but they had. I wrote down in my notes a couple really good possessions with Diabate at the five. Probably not a coincidence.
So flipping it around to Michigan.
And do State, you want to be playing Hunter Dickinson 38 minutes?
if I have six guys, probably.
Well, that's
right.
That's fair.
He's by far the best player on the team. I would play him as much as you possibly can. I think that's really the only option at this point.
Full allotment of minutes. I don't want to play him 38 minutes.
Flip it around
to
Michigan State. I feel like it's either Malik Hall game or Joey Hauser game. They're both sort of, they're inconsistent. They have upside. I think Hauser has been playing pretty solid defensively over the last few games. Hasn't really caught fire with the shot, but like if you go back and watch Michigan State, like he gets a lot of good looks. So at some point he's going to hit a bunch of threes in a game. You just got to hope it's not when he plays your team. Who matches up better in this spot for Michigan State, would you say?
Against Diabate?
Against Michigan, and like whatever Michigan's going to have. Who's it a better spot for?
I mean, I like the way Hauser, I like the way both of them have really been playing. I mean, Malik kind of had that no-show at Northwestern, but otherwise he's kind of had steady play. Like, look at the games right before that. That Minnesota, Penn State, Oakland, High Point stretch. Like, he's giving you what you want right there, right? Like, going 5 for 8 from the field with a three-pointer and then good defense and some rebounding. Like what you need to avoid is him going for 24 points and then zero, right? Like he did kind of find a cadence there for a while, and his last game against Nebraska played well. I think both of them are. I don't think this is an either or proposition right now. I think they're both pretty set up pretty well for what they do, and I like the fact that the way that both of them are playing right now, you do run different stuff. Right. Because Hauser with that little, you know, pick and pop stuff that he does is a little bit different than what Hall gives you. But you really don't have to be that dramatically different with those two on the court.
Yeah. I'll be curious. Like the interesting thing about this is I think Hauser is like solid defensively, but if Moose is on the court, they're going to post him up. He's going to get touches. I'll be curious how that matchup plays out because despite all of his ups and downs, Michigan plays through Diabate a lot. So I'd be curious on that defensively. Obviously, he has a big size advantage when Malik Hall's in there. I think Hauser's really the guy you want to post up. And I don't know if that's kind of the problem with Michigan is even when you're doing that, it's more of a like a slow jog. It's like a walking pace. Like you're never like pulling away. You're not going to get on a huge run just posting up Moose Diabate every time they're on the court. Sure. But that defensive matchup is interesting, and I think it's at least somewhere Michigan will look to attack.
Diabate posting them up?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he can muscle it over both of them for sure.
And he's talent, like he's good as a post-up
scorer. Especially when he's at the five.
If I'm a four-man guarding him, I would remember that he shoots 50% at the free throw line or something like that, and I only play 20 minutes a game, I would use those fouls. I want to get to the five because I also have some
advantage Michigan State.
Yeah, especially when we don't know who's available beyond Diabate. I think I would go Michigan State. If I think it's a matchup that Michigan could, I don't think it's a huge. I don't think it's as bad of a mismatch for Diabate as some other games Michigan's had this year, if that makes sense.
Okay.
That's fair. If one of those guys goes out, I put my money on it being Malik Hall and Michigan State spreading Michigan out a little more when Diabate's out there. I think he would be more of a problem kind of spreading out driving on Diabate than what Hauser does.
I will say, though, when Hauser's out there, I can envision Hauser playing some – decent defense on Diabate because he's crafty enough to limit some touches and then, you know, at least check him pretty good enough that he's not just going to go right up and over him like I think he would against Malik Hall in terms if they're, you know, 8 feet from the basket. But
rebounding on both sides of this matchup, I think up to four positions really key. Diabate is capable of being a really good offensive rebounder. He's not always, and like Michigan does not rebound nearly as well as you would think for a team that plays two bigs. Both Hauser and Malik Hall and Bingham are all great offensive rebounders. That could be a key swing stat, I think, in how this all plays out when you consider both teams play fairly big on the inside.
Yeah. All right. You wanted to get to the five.
Yeah, this is the money matchup. If Michigan's going to win the game, Hunter Dickinson has to play well. That's pretty much established at this point. I was going back and like watching some of last year's clips just to kind of remember how Michigan State guarded him, how all that played out. There was a lot of Kithier abuse and of Julius Marble. Like that, most of his baskets came against those guys. That wasn't just a product of Bingham necessarily playing well. It was that Bingham didn't always play in those games. So it's a little hard to tell. What stood out to me though is Michigan State mostly played pretty straight up on Hunter. He got a lot of turnovers in those games, so you would think they double all the time, but most of them were like silly offensive fouls and moving screens and a bunch of typical bullshit that you get in these kind of games.
Right.
Michigan needs to play through Hunter to win. I do think that they are playing through him a lot better over the last like month or so. That was a problem early in the season, but he's getting all the touches he can get at this point. But Bingham's been one of the very best rim protectors in the country. I feel like he's in a bit of a skid. He didn't play a ton of minutes last night. That was more to do, I would say, with Rutgers going small though.
Yeah.
But I feel like he was on a stretch early in the year where he was Nebraska.
Yeah. Yeah.
Early in the year, he was playing like 30 minutes a game, blocking like 15 shots a game and just dominating games. Feels like it's a little more of closer to a 50-50 platoon with Marble at this point, though.
Yeah, I wonder how much of that was matchup specific.
For sure against Nebraska, I think part was.
Yeah, and he didn't play against High Point, which was three games ago. I think in this game they're going to go all in on his minutes, and you'd see him closer to that 24-26 area than you did previously, because one of the best parts about what he's been doing this year is he's playing without fouling, and now he hasn't played anyone quite like Dickinson, and certainly hasn't probably had to defend as many post touches as he will in this game, at least off the top of my head.
The Kansas game, he was fantastic against McCormick in that game.
Yeah.
Like that was when it was like, okay, Marcus Bingham's for real in my mind. So I don't know. I'm trying to if you look through the rest of Michigan State's schedule, it hasn't been a lot of big ass lumbering post up guys, but he's been so good. So I can't say that Dickinson has to push him around, I would say.
Yeah. And there are, he does have a tendency sometimes where if he's not overly engaged defensively, he kind of gives that little soft coverage where he just will give a hand on the hip. And if you back him down, he backs down with you. Like he's not even putting contact into you to keep your feet where they are. Right. You just back his ass right on down and go score. And then other times, like against the McCormick, for example, right. He's set, his feet are there. He's kind of anchored and he's playing a physical brand. And you have to think, right. Since that game against Nebraska, they've had the pads out and have just been pounding Bingham in practice, getting ready for this matchup. I mean, I can picture it in my goddamn head. I didn't even need to go up for availability today. I can tell you what they're doing. So that's going to be what it is. And what do you think? I was thinking this when I was on I did like a Big Ten call earlier today, and I said this and I couldn't quite come up with the, examples in my head, but I feel like guys with as much length as Bingham have given Dickinson trouble at times. And I can't remember it for the life of me, but it just seems like that's something in my brain somewhere. I could be completely wrong.
Loco did. The kid at Arizona, I would say he's probably the most similar. I think he's still bigger than Bingham a bit.
Bigger, wider shoulders.
More like a thicker, right. But he's that kind of big, right? Long.
Right. But I'm talking like that length where you're that guy's hand, someone's hand is actually at his point of release on his shit. I feel like that has given him some difficulty in the past. And I mean, Coburn certainly gave him
trouble. Coburn was that's the first muscle guy he couldn't move last year.
Right, right.
Cody Riley did a good job against him in the UCLA game. He's more he's more just 6'9". He's pretty thick. I think Coloco's probably the best example. Obiagu, but that dude's just a fucking tank. He's right. he makes Kofi look small. Do you think Michigan State doubles at all?
No. Not unless he forces it. I think they go straight up and they trust that if he's not getting back down and he's defending every shot without fouling, you take it because he's going to get some.
Do you think that's the right call?
To start out, yes.
Interesting. So I
– again, because if I'm Michigan State, one of the last things I want is for Michigan to start making threes and suddenly find something. If you're going to tell me right now that Dickinson's going to go and get 27 and everyone – and the rest of the team's going to shoot 30% from the field, I'll take that all day.
Yeah, I just wonder if doubling him makes sense when you have guys to double off, right? Like, if Malik Hall is out there guarding Musa Diabate and Musa is sitting at the three-point line, why are you not just doubling with Malik Hall? Stuff like that.
What I wonder is... Diabate playing alongside him, yes.
If Diabate is out there, and I know we talked about this as a bad thing, but we've seen Michigan kind of invert things, right? Put Hunter out in the high post. That would hypothetically pull Bingham away from the basket, which is the one thing you really want to do. And if you can then isolate Musa on Hauser or Malik Hall, like that might be something that becomes interesting. That depends a lot on Hunter making a three early, I would say, to work.
And if you see that, if you're Michigan, you can switch.
Michigan State?
Yeah, if you're Michigan State and they run that once and you say, okay, you know, we're switching this thing up. I want Bingham on Diabate.
Yeah, that's true. Hypothetically within the flow of a possession, if you can post up Hunter on Hauser, you'd feel pretty good about that too, though.
If you're gonna try
to switch that, right? So that's kind of the if you're looking for something Michigan can do, I would say to create some advantages, like I think you have to be able to pull Bingham away from the rim a little bit because you're gonna run this ball screen stuff. Bingham's just going to sit in the paint and he's going to block every shot that Devontae Jones comes in there with. That's what he does. So the two things you can do are either try to pull Dickinson away from the basket, or I think you have to crash really hard with Diabate, with Dickinson, whoever's on the roll side of the ball screen, because Bingham will chase blocks. And Michigan scored on a few plays in that last year's games where Bingham would go for the block on like a Mike Smith drive. And there was just an easy putback on the backside.
My only problem with – I could see that as, like, a second-half deal, right, if, like, things just aren't working out and you need to go to that. But, like, part of the issue here is Michigan's best offense, its best play. The only thing that it really does better than anyone else right now is Dickinson on the block scoring the ball. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you have to go to that a lot. I agree. I see what you're saying.
So, like, you don't want to take away your best thing just to put them into an awkward spot. And I get doing it here and there, right, and mixing and matching and keeping them on their toes, sure.
That's also why I think you got to think about doubling Dickinson. Because, like you said, that's the one thing Michigan can really do well.
And now, here's the thing, though. If you want to tell me, okay, the guards on the perimeter, right, you're not going to dig, you're not going to double, but whoever's on Diabate doubles – I'll buy that.
Yeah, that to me should be Michigan State's game plan when the ball goes in the post. And I guess you can try to make that more difficult based on where, like if Diabate's on the opposite side or whatnot. Right. But got something coming.
Well, I don't know if this might be for the points of the game. I was going to ask you how much zone you think Michigan's going to play. That's probably a question for the next section though here.
Michigan's
we can keep it to the five right now if you want.
Yeah, I mean, and we can talk, I guess, a little bit about the bench. I would just throw in, we kind of been going through the bench as we go through, but Marble, I think Michigan has to attack there.
Jump ahead. Advantage at the center position. Dickinson or Bingham?
Dickinson.
I'll take Dickinson too. But if if you were going to tell me that we're going to come out of this game talking about Marcus Bingham, I would not be surprised whatsoever. Like, I think it's close. I think it's pretty damn close between those two right now.
It's just, it's very different, right? Like, you talk about what people are at. Like, Bingham just needs to defend Hunter Dickinson. He could score 0 points and be the MVP of the game. Dickinson needs to go and get 25 if Michigan wants to really win, right? Like, it's just, they're in very different roles, I would say, as far as
they change the game in different ways, for sure. Anyways, okay. The bench.
So, the bench.
Or what?
The bench, Kobe Bufkin against Michigan State's very well-ironed bench. I think this is just impossible to really say based on who's available at this point. Michigan State has kind of like two deep at key spots. Mm-hmm. Michigan doesn't. It's funny in a vacuum, thinking about that Rutgers game, playing with just your starters for a one game thing isn't the worst thing if they play well and don't get in foul trouble. I do think if Michigan State knows that Michigan has six guys or seven guys, whatever they have, however many start, like Tom Izzo will be selling out to get some bullshit foul called on whoever
for sure
from the opening jump. And I think you'll see that as a very key part of the game, especially in the first half. And that could throw, like, Michigan already has issues with that because they never play guys with two fouls. But if someone were to get two fouls, that's Eli Brooks or Hunter Dickinson, like, Michigan's whole game plan kind of goes out the window.
Yeah, then you're just...
Michigan State doesn't have that problem at really any spot.
No. I mean, if you go through...
Gabe Brown maybe could be an issue as a two-way guy.
That's true. But Gabe Brown does... what is the most fouls Gabe has picked up? Gabe has not... He had four fouls in the UConn game other than... Oh, and he fouled out of the Butler game.
I think he had...
Since the UConn game... He has not had more than two fouls in a game.
One of those games in the Bahamas, though, I think he got two first half fouls and sat, right?
Yeah.
I feel like he did.
Yes, the Loyola game. But anyway, but if you look at Michigan State's bench, like, Marble's Marble, right? He's going to go and he's going to bang for his minutes and he'll do his thing. I don't see much from Sissoko in this game. He'll give you a little bit here and there. Malik Hall is as solid as they come. He's probably among reserves in the league, he's probably one of the best two or three. Fair?
Probably. Yeah, I mean, how many reserves are better than the guy they pack up?
Fair. Great point. Jaden Akins will do something that all of us tweet about because it's going to be awesome, whether it's a dunk or a block or something crazy. And then, you know, Hogard's interesting because he can give them something. Scoring and all that. He can also he can cost you 5-6 possessions, 7 possessions, whether it's a turnover or not, whether it's just barreling to the basket and just making a bad pass or doing whatever, just losing the ball, you know, like he can string together when he just gets way ahead of his skis, you know, he can string together 4 possessions that can like lead to another team getting a run out of it. He can also score 8 straight points. You know, like it's.
Yeah. I mean, I think Walker's the more dangerous player. If Walker were to get.
Yeah. But we're talking about bench.
I agree with what you're saying. Like, I think if you're Michigan, you're happy with Hogard having to shoulder the weight of whatever happens.
So I have 2 questions for you. All the players who had to sit out the Rutgers game, if you could take one and make sure he can play in this game, who are you taking?
Terrence Williams,
right.
I don't think there's much question.
If the whole group were healthy, say Michigan has a full tilt roster for this game, Michigan State has a full tilt roster. In that scenario, whose bench do you – because obviously the advantage in this game is for Michigan State. But if they were both fully full tilt healthy, who would you give the advantage to?
I mean, Michigan State's bench is better. Michigan doesn't really have any trusted pieces on its bench.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere. This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
That's pretty straightforward, I would say.
Okay. So advantage Michigan State across the board. Let's get into some key points because I have two more questions for you that I'm really curious because I know you've been looking at this game. What?
I have a stat.
You're interrupting me.
Okay, I have a stat I want to throw up. All right. Let's hear. Sorry to interrupt you.
Give me the stat.
Michigan State in November, 10th in the country in defense, 102nd in offense. What do you think those numbers are since December 1st?
These are like the Torvik splits. Okay. Since December 1st, what their numbers
are. So they were a top 10 defense outside the top 100 on offense.
That Oakland game probably fucked up the defensive numbers. I'll say 20 and 40.
So ever since, they're 9th on offense, 115th on defense.
Oh, whoa.
So, like, Michigan State's been in this weird stretch where what they were really good at early in the year, they've sort of lost a little bit. But it hasn't really mattered because they've shot 44% from three since December 1st. So the offense has been just rocking and rolling. So that stat is interesting to me because I think it kind of illustrates just the slog of games they're in. But if you go through and look at their KenPom, like they've been giving up a point per possession a lot of times out. Like Oakland obviously was a big one, high point.
What's their turnover rate in that stretch?
And yeah, and that's the other thing. The turnovers are a real insane fucking problem because those are also free points. They're not just like travels. They're just throwing the ball somewhere random and it ends up a layup. That is the huge X factor in this game is that if Michigan State just gives the ball away on a quarter of its possessions, it's going to just give Michigan a chance.
It's absurd to have the 23rd offense in efficiency while ranked 260th in turnover rate. Like that's so hard to do. And you just wonder, like, if they cut that by a third and we're just at 13 or 14% turnover rate, like, holy Christ, what they could potentially be. It's just crazy. I think I tweeted it last night. Like, there's five offenses in the country that rank in the top 50 while also ranking the top 50 in efficiency while also ranking it sub 200 in turnover rate.
Yeah, and the thing I'd add about the turnovers is, like, Michigan under Juwan Howard doesn't force turnovers. It's just not a priority.
Not at all.
But Michigan State's turnovers are not usually, like, forced. They're not opponent-driven. They're mistake-driven, I would say. And they're Michigan State trying to do too much with the ball more than the other team pressuring them or getting out and passing lanes. So I almost think those are even more detrimental against a team like Michigan that doesn't really rely on forcing turnovers, right? If you're playing against some VCU Havoc bullshit team, they need those turnovers to score because they get them all the time. Michigan, you're giving them free possessions when the last thing you want to do is give Michigan easy baskets because it's been a bit of a chore for them to create easy baskets.
I would be, and I'm sure the turnovers have something to do with, like, the amount of possessions in their last two games. They had 73 possessions against Northwestern. They had 74 against Nebraska. Now, part of that's how Nebraska wants to go, right? But, like, that's too fast for this Michigan State team, I think. Do you agree?
I would go as fast as I could against Michigan. I think you create a bunch of advantages, even just playing with pace on offense. And I think, for me, where this game is going to be decided isn't in, like, individual matchups. It's in this Michigan team is not good at the things that you have to be good at to beat Michigan State. You have to play good transition defense. You have to communicate, and you have to be able to identify sets and react to sets and defend sets. And I don't think Michigan's good at any of those things to the level they have been in 5, 6, 7 years.
Can I go back to that question about zone? What do you think for Michigan?
Michigan zone was horrific against
so
Rutgers.
Bad.
I don't know that that's the answer. And
it's Michigan bad against State's, UCF too.
Michigan State's the 11th best 3-point shooting team in the country. They're shooting 44% over the last month and a half. I don't think zone makes sense, especially because they don't really have like on ball score. I think you have to just force them to try to score over the top. And I like Minnesota scored over the top against Michigan, but Michigan played exactly the defensive game plan it like wants to play on a nightly basis.
Right.
The last two games, they've lost that. And I don't know if that's an adjustment because they're playing against a Rutgers team that can't shoot and they help more, whatever. If they play the kind of defense they played against Rutgers where they're over helping in gaps, they're like hedging ball screens, doing all these things, they're going to get torn apart. And you can't, Michigan State shoots too well to do that. You have to say, okay, Tyson Walker, Max Christie, if you're going to go and shoot over us, do it and hope that they don't. That's got to be the game plan for Michigan. And they've kind of lost that over the last month. And that's a big risk, I think.
Yeah. Hmm. I will say, and we've talked about this on many previous shows, I think. Like Michigan State's statistical profile, I think makes it one of like the most interesting teams in the country to be like, what happens over the second half of the, like, what really is this team? Is it going to be a top 10 3-point shooting team in the country? Like, are they really that good of a shooting team, or does that level out? And do the turnovers change? Is the defense, like you said, like those defensive numbers, that's wild. Like, how, okay, so how really good defensively is Michigan State, right? Like, there could be a case where this is actually who they are, and by February 1st, they're still cooking with gas and they are a top 10 team and, you know, on their way to a whatever seed and they are in contention for the Big Ten championship. I think maybe not just as likely, but there's certainly a scenario that plays out, right? Where over the next 10 games, certain things kind of level out, so to speak, right? Like there's that, not what's the one
regression to the mean?
Yeah, there, yeah. And what's that? What, no, what's the thing on Ken Pom where it's like your luck factor?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Ken Pom has a luck stat.
Like some of those types of things, like whether that kind of levels out and, you know, maybe they look like a different team over the next 10 games. And then we're having the conversation of, yeah, if you looked at their stats on January 6th, like you could make a case that this was kind of bound to happen. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
So maybe there could be 3-point regression on both ends of the court. Sure. I tend to buy in all the way on the defense at this point based on what they have, how they play, and
who. Even though those December numbers that you just said.
Yeah, that just feels like a blip to me. I just thought it was pretty eye-opening just as far as, like, I think it says more about how they've played these last few games than how I think they'll play this year. I think that they're, like right now they're 19th on KenPom. That doesn't seem that far off, right? Like top 15 feels about right. I don't think they're better than Illinois. I think Illinois is the best team in the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the one thing we don't know really is what they look like on the road against good teams. I mean, they've played at Minnesota. They played at Northwestern, played at Butler. That's the one thing maybe left to prove, but I don't really think that there's some huge regression that's going to like bite this team in the ass. I think it's a pretty vintage Michigan State team, right? Like these things that you're talking about are pretty common in Michigan State statistical profile on a yearly basis. It's not like they're some wild difference or anything like that. So I think this is just what a good Michigan State team looks like. I think
they're 2-point solid team. Percentage is typically better than this on their good teams.
Fair. And they don't have that's a fair point. If you look at the stats, they haven't had,
and they have a history of turning the ball over. Not to this extent. This is preposterous.
That 2-point stat's interesting. If you look back at like the program history, they were 241st last year, but they've basically been top 70 all the way back to 2011, which was one of the worst Michigan State teams in a long time. That's a good point. that's the one concern, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. And I do think they'll lose a game somewhere along the way that maybe you wouldn't expect if some shooters that are running hot don't. But
what they'll do, this team has the classic three-game losing streak at some point written all over them, where they'll lose three straight and everyone's going to be like, and Izzo's going to, you know, lose his shit and everyone's going to be questioning Michigan State, and then they'll turn it right back around and go and contend for the Big Ten championship. That's what's going to happen.
So what is your biggest key to this game?
I mean, it's such a cop-out, right, to say Michigan having defensive competence and making shots. Right? That's overly simplified.
making shots is very key. I would say the way I'd put it in this case would be game control, right? Like for Michigan to win this game, it's all about like not allowing Michigan State to go on a 10-0 run, right? Not allowing those transition opportunities, not allowing those mistakes that killed you against UCF, against Rutgers. Like Michigan lost that Rutgers game because they just didn't show up for the first 5 minutes. It was basically even since then. Michigan lost the UCF game because they just completely lost their shit for 5 minutes in the second half, and then all of a sudden the game was over. You can't have a stretch like that, whatever you do. And until you can do that, you're not going to really beat anyone. You're certainly not going to beat Michigan State.
Yeah, this team doesn't know how to win yet. They have not learned how to win, whereas on the other team, you've got a lot of guys who've played a lot of basketball. So I agree with you. I think that's a very fair point. The bad news I think for Michigan is, after that last game, like the biggest vulnerability Michigan State has right now is its turnovers. And I'd be fairly surprised to see a performance in this game like we've seen of late with the way that they've handled the ball and just so carelessly thrown away turnovers, because he will go out there and kill somebody.
I'm just saying, January transition, every year.
I'm not saying they're going to solve it for the season in this game. I'm just saying in this game, I think there's going to be a level of control where I don't see them getting up into the 15, 18, 20 turnovers. I just think they're going to be a little bit more locked in on that this week. That's all I'm saying. What do you think the environment's going to be like?
I don't know on that, but what I would say on that is it's an awful spot. Like if you're like a betting on like spot and situation, it's a complete just epic trap spot for Michigan State. Everything on paper just points to, okay, Michigan State's been so much better. Everything's working for Michigan State. Everything fits. Michigan, things are like as bad as you could possibly imagine. Even like mistakes are being exaggerated. They played two games on the road. They're playing at home. It's like everything about it says that Michigan State's going to be like a 3-point favorite, and it's just a complete trap to bet on. But logically, I can't really explain to you why Michigan might have a chance to win, especially with COVID and everything else. But it feels smelly. It feels like,
you know, it's just a risky
situation.
Here's the comp. That Memphis-Alabama game, like 2 or 3 weeks ago. You remember that?
This is a very niche comp.
Well, no. Memphis was in the throes of its spiral. Let me see.
Alabama had just beat someone, right?
Gonzaga. Alabama had just beat Gonzaga. Memphis was on a 4-game losing streak to Iowa State, Georgia, Ole Miss, and Murray State. Alabama went to Memphis and the line was like Bama -1. Like it didn't make any sense on paper. And everyone out there was like, oh my God, load up on Alabama. This is obvious. Like there's no fucking way Alabama or Memphis is going to get its shit together in this night. And then out of nowhere, Memphis won 92-78. They had played the game of their lives. They were unbelievable. And then lost to Tulane a couple days later. You know, like that's what this game kind of, If I'm going to come up with a way that Michigan wins, that's it. There's no actual like schematic thing. It's going to be like, no, just weird shit's going to happen. They're going to make shots out of nowhere and get rolling.
Yeah. I mean, it would just, it simply comes down to Michigan's players who have been playing badly, playing better because they're at home and because of everything else. Like, I, despite all that, I would still pick Michigan State to win, because I think there's some pretty just fundamentally stuff that's not working with Michigan top to bottom. Like, I'm not going to go and say Michigan's going to win, but it's just an ugly spot in general. It just feels dicey in general. I mean, you can even compare it to the game in East Lansing last year, where the two teams played and Michigan looked better, and then they played 2 days later and it went completely the other way. Like, it's just,
Michigan claimed the Big Ten championship game in the first game, and that second game was made in the shade. It went exactly as I think a lot of people thought it was going to.
Yeah, we'll see. So are you going to make a pick?
Sure. I mean, I think that we have to. I'm going to take Michigan State. I kind of like at 9 spot, that where it's like it's close, and then they kind of maybe spread it out a little bit late in the second half, make a push. Michigan makes it a little bit closer in the end, and it's a 9-point win.
So are you also predicting that the game happens?
I am predicting that the game happens, yes.
Yeah, I'll take Michigan State by 6.
Okay. These are boring picks. One of us should have taken Michigan just to piss off at least half of our audience.
that's how you make a very popular, well-liked podcast. You just piss off people that listen at any given time.
That's us, a popular, well-liked podcast. Well, this was fun, man.
This was good.
We will recap this game.
Yeah, we got Saturday. We'll probably come back with a Monday pod on a normal
Monday schedule. Pod. Yeah, we're not a. We could maybe do it Sunday, actually, now that I think of it, just to get it done.
All right, well, we'll play it by ear.
The Eagles Cowboys game got flexed to a night game. So there's that.
Well, in that case, show's on, guys. The Eagles game got flexed. We're good to go.
Already in the playoffs. This is just go kick the shit out of the Cowboys just to do it.
Oh, so who the hell cares and has to watch that?
Excuse me, sir.
All right. Well, we'll be back with another pod. When is after the game? Stay on your toes.
After the game. All right, everyone. Subscribe to UM Hoops. Dylan's post-game coverage will be some of the best that you'll find. Subscribe to The Athletic. We got our own version of the three-man weave going. And no disrespect to the actual three-man weave, who you and I both love and appreciate very much. But it'll be me, Colton, and Austin Meek at the game on Saturday.
I didn't know where you were going with this.
Covering this thing from all angles, man. We have three writers at this game. What you get for an Athletic subscription. So subscribe to The Athletic, and apparently subscribe to The New York Times too. And we will see everyone later. Cheers.